This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are cases where the facts are murky, cases where investigators genuinely don't know what happened yet, cases where the information coming out is slow, careful, and consistent because everyone is aligned on what little they do know. And then there are cases like this one, the death of Celeste Rivas Hernandez, the girl found dead in a Tesla linked to the rising musician David. It is not just confusing, it is tragic. It's not just unfinished, it is, without exaggeration, one of the most contradictory, fragmented, whiplash-inducing investigations that we've seen in a long time. Not because the circumstances are inexplicable, but because the communication around the case is inexplicable. Every day, it feels like LAPD is living in one version of the story, the media is living in another, anonymous sources are living in a third, and the public is left trying to assemble a coherent narrative from puzzle pieces that don't fit together. The result is a case that looks less like a homicide investigation and more like a fog machine, where the smoke doesn't hide the truth, it just obscures the shape of the lies, the half-truths, and the withheld information behind all of it. So, let's break it down. Not the sensational rumors, but the contradictions. Because when contradictions are this significant, when they persist this stubbornly, they're not accidents. They're signs that something deeper is going on. And in a case with this much confusion surrounding it right now, it's not necessarily a good sign. There is confusion everywhere. And I want to start with the contradiction that starts and sits at the foundation of this entire story. What kind of investigation is this? Because depending on which official LAPD statement you read and what date you read it, and who it comes from, and is it official or unofficial, the case is either a simple death investigation in which a child tragically died and her body was concealed for reasons unknown, or a full-blown murder investigation serious enough that the LAPD went to a judge, laid out their case, and obtained a court-ordered secrecy hold over every single piece of medical evidence. The two lanes do not coexist very well peacefully together. Early on, LAPD told multiple outlets the same line. This is a death investigation. We have not labeled it a homicide. We have not identified any suspects. Just a body found in a Tesla at a tow yard. Undetermined cause of death, undetermined matter. That was the public-facing message. But then, quietly, and only because of a court filing later obtained by the Los Angeles Times, out comes a completely different reality. In that filing, Detective Joshua Byers of LAPD Robbery Homicide explicitly refers to the case as an investigation into a murder. Not a possible homicide, not an undetermined death, not a suspicious circumstance. Murder. And it wasn't just language. They weren't trying to win a debate or soothe the public. They were trying to convince a judge to seal every single medical record related to Celeste's deaths, the autopsy, toxicology, cause, manner, photos, all of it. And the judge has now agreed. So we have two realities. The public-facing reality. We don't know if this is even a crime. And the courtroom reality. This is a murder investigation. And everybody, all the hands in the cookie jar, trying to figure out what to say when someone asks them a question. Do I say what I know? Do I say what I don't know? Do I say what I think it is? Do I say what it really is, but we're not telling anybody yet? Do I say what we're not telling anybody yet, but what we think it is? Or what do we say? How do these two realities exist at the same time? The answer is poorly. They exist poorly. But that's the through line of the entire case. The facts aren't just unclear. The story is unclear. The messaging is unclear. And the voices telling the story can't seem to agree with each other. Nowhere is that more obvious than the confusion surrounding the condition of Celeste's body, specifically the now infamous frozen body element, which we had talked about with Jennifer Coffendaffer on this show. Sources had been telling NBC4 and ABC in Los Angeles and People magazine, according to those very outlets, that the body had been frozen. Let's talk about this, because now we're getting the police saying, no, the body wasn't found frozen. And that found aspect is the key piece to that statement, because in my opinion, the two can coexist. Frozen body, not frozen body. How? Let's talk about this clearly, because clarity is exactly what the public has not been given up to this point. Early rumors, a sensational tabloid-born kind claim Celeste's body was found partially frozen or even fully frozen. And then TikTok ran within the Tesla. Sensational, yes, but these claims spread fast. Or is it sensational? Or is it people just running with what they think they hear? Because it's not rocket science to understand that if you put a body in the back of a Tesla and leave it sitting for weeks on end, the body's not going to be frozen anymore. It's going to thaw. And this is how my brain was working the whole time that this came into play, that, okay, it was once frozen. It showed signs of being frozen. Advanced decomposition, which they do talk about, that happens after you freeze something. And a medical examiner observation versus the investigator observation of something can be completely different depending on who's looking at it, how they're looking at it, and their expertise. Just because it's not frozen at that moment in time doesn't mean a medical examiner couldn't go, this body's been frozen before. It doesn't have to be frozen in that moment for someone to say, this was once frozen. The LAPD's robbery homicide captain, Scott Williams, spoke to People magazine and says plainly, no, she wasn't frozen, and no, she wasn't decapitated, and no, she wasn't dismembered. Her remains were in an advanced state of decomposition, and he adds an important detail. She had been in that car for weeks in the heat. Okay, I don't think anyone is questioning that. And that's where most outlets stop. Case closed, right? Frozen theory debunked, right? No. Not exactly, because what Williams actually said, if you examine his words or listen to them or just comprehend what he said, is that she was not frozen when found. He did not say she was never frozen at any earlier point. He did not say there's no evidence of prior freezing. He did not say the body shows no signs of early temperature manipulation. He only said the simplest, narrowest version of the claim. She wasn't frozen in the trunk when we found her. And that's very different from she was never frozen. And here's the uncomfortable truth that no headline wants to point out. Those two versions absolutely can coexist. They can be true simultaneously. A body can be frozen early, stored elsewhere, thawed, left to decompose in the heat for weeks. And if you do that, by the time police find it, decomposition can mask or overwhelm the earlier freezing phase, especially if the medical examiner's findings are sealed and the police are only speaking in broad public-facing terms and what exactly they saw in their department, not exactly what a medical examiner saw in their department. Is that exactly what happened? Your guess is as good as mine. But usually when pieces are interjected into the case from official sources, there's usually some element of truth to it. How it plays with the rest of the facts, that depends on the case. And then it's also then dependent on how one interprets those facts, because no one's flat out giving us a timeline saying, here's this, here's that, here's officially how it all went down. Here's a nugget here, here's a nugget there, there's a nugget here. So if we're hearing nuggets of, well, she was in an advanced state of decomposition in this Tesla, cooking in there for weeks, basically, and then you have another source telling very reputable outlets she was frozen, okay, it doesn't mean she was frozen coming out of the trunk. That never has made any sense to me. The only thing that's ever made sense to me was that somebody froze her, thought this is a bad idea. Let's throw her in the trunk. Another bad idea. The two can easily coexist here. This is not, it's not rocket science. One doesn't cancel out the other. When media outlets claim LAPD debunked the freezer theory, what they're actually doing is oversimplifying a much narrower detail, a denial that appeal applies only to the moment of discovery, not the full timeline of events that preceded it. Again, contradiction, not necessarily between truth and lie, but between what was said and what people think was said. And the theme continues everywhere you look in this case. Let's move to the next major contradiction, the dismemberment rumor. The rumor didn't come from nowhere. It came from tabloids who claimed dismembered remains were found in the Tesla. Sensational, sloppy, irresponsible, but common in tabloid land. Then again, Captain Williams clearly denies it. No dismemberment, no decapitation. You would think that settles it. But when People Magazine, the very same outlet publishing Williams' denials, publishes a different story, quoting a police source claiming investigators believe David had help dismembering and disposing of the body, it makes people wonder. Let that all sink in. One article says the body was not dismembered. Another article says the same publication quotes a source saying investigators believe dismemberment did occur. Here's where my mind lines up. Advanced decomposition. You freeze something, you let it thaw, cook it in the trunk. You know what? When you start taking those pieces out, they kind of fall apart. And it wouldn't be crazy for someone with information on the inside who was aware of how the body was found, maybe even saw it, noticed, this body doesn't seem to be quite together. Doesn't necessarily mean dismembered by another person, but a body can naturally dismember itself if sat in a cooking trunk after being frozen and then thawed out. Muscles, all that breaks down, and eventually your limbs just kind of fall off. Not dismembering in the let's take a hacksaw sense, but dismembering in a sense of nature is taking its course. This is not the public messing up. It's not TikTok hallucinating details. It's contradictory information coming out of the same newsroom. Another contradiction. And when we get to the Tesla, now we shouldn't even have to discuss the Tesla in great detail. The car is the crime scene. You would think the type of Tesla would be one of the most basic, undisputed facts in the entire case. But here again, the reporting is all over the place. Some outlets describe it as a Tesla sedan and explicitly say the body was in the front trunk or frunk. Others describe it as a Tesla SUV. Some call it a rental. Some call it personal vehicle. Some say the body was in the rear trunk. Some don't specifically say anything at all. When the crime scene itself can't be consistently described, it's not just sloppy journalism. That's a sign that the official information being handed down is chaotic, imprecise, or deliberately thin. Which brings us to the timeline, one of the most important elements of any suspicious death. LAPD has repeatedly maintained that Celeste's body was in the car for weeks. This phrasing isn't ambiguous. They used it multiple times. Weeks. Fine. But if the body was in the car for weeks, that does not automatically rule out the possibility that she was stored elsewhere first. That does not rule out earlier freezing. That does not rule out being moved between locations. That does not rule out a secondary scene. That does not rule out a delay between death and placement in the Tesla. But the public hasn't been offered any clarity on those intermediate steps. Instead, we get a very simple, very narrow phrase: she was in the car for weeks. It's a statement that answers the last part of the timeline while leaving every earlier part just basically shrouded in silence. And when those gaps exist, speculation fills them, because that's what speculation does. It grows wherever factual clarity is withheld. And nowhere are the contradictions more glaring, more frustrating, and more destabilizing than in the question of David Burke, David himself. What is his status? This should be easy to answer. It should be printed, clear, and consistent across every official source. But instead, we get the same problem again. Two realities occupying the same space. On one hand, the LAPD spokespeople, the PIOs, we get their line, he has not been interviewed. We have not spoken with him. We have not named any suspects. This is what we're hearing from official, unofficial sources. You're hearing both inside and official, anonymous sources. Not an official writing, but they're talking to someone officially inside, according to some reporting. Then from People magazine, quoting Captain Williams of RHD, we get a different message entirely. He's spoken with investigators. He's not been fully cooperative. He is considered a suspect internally. What is it? Some say no interview. Some say he did speak with police. The captain, in some reporting, says he is a suspect. Anonymous police sources say detectives believe he had help moving the body. But other sources say, nah, we don't know if a crime even occurred at all. This is where contradictions stop being inconvenient and start being alarming, because when the communications wing of the LAPD and the investigative wing of the LAPD are telling two different stories, the public has no idea which version to trust and what reporting to trust, especially when reputable sources are talking to insiders with these departments and claiming these department insiders are telling us this or that, and then the department says, nope, not at all. And another one says, oh yeah, it is. It's not about protecting an investigation. Secrecy is one thing. The inconsistency that fuels suspicion is exactly this. If you ask the public to draw a timeline of this investigation using the information provided in press statements, they couldn't do it. They would end up with two timelines stacked on top of each other, and that's exactly what we're seeing in real time. In my opinion, the biggest contradiction, the one that reveals the tension beneath all of this, is the sealed autopsy. Autopsy records do not get sealed automatically. They do not get sealed lightly. They do not get sealed unless the cause or manner of death would significantly impact the investigation. And when LAPD went to court to seal every single medical detail related to Celeste's death, they weren't doing that because they thought this was an accidental overdose. They weren't doing that because they thought this was a tragic situation with no criminal element. They did that because they wanted to prevent the public and anyone else in their circle from knowing what happened to her, or when it happened, or how it happened. You only seal an autopsy when you're protecting a case. You only seal toxicology when you're protecting a timeline. You only seal manner of death when its release would change the public's understanding dramatically, perhaps too dramatically. So the contradiction becomes undeniable. We don't even know if a crime occurred. Public courtroom actions or private courtroom actions, we need to hide everything because this is a murder investigation. These two realities cannot coexist unless the LAPD is trying to walk the thinnest possible tightrope between transparency and strategy, or unless the left hand and right hand aren't talking to each other at all. Either option is concerning. And that brings us to now, the moment where the public is left staring at the case full of conflicting facts, half denials, and uncertainty. So let's step back. Let's ask the question that should have been asked from the start. Why are there so many contradictions? Contradictions like this do not happen in a vacuum. They happen when investigators know more than they can say, public information officers say less than investigators know, and anonymous insiders say more than anyone is supposed to know. Tabloids invent details no one ever said, and journalists confused by all of this report every version side by side. When communication is inconsistent, the truth becomes impossible to identify on the surface. When the public statements are vague, speculation rushes in to fill the gaps every time. When official channels contradict each other, the public loses confidence, and rightfully so. This case doesn't feel fractured because the truth is complicated. It feels fractured because the messaging is. It's not the facts creating the confusion. It's the silence around them. And until LAPD aligns its internal messaging with its public messaging, until the major contradictions are resolved instead of ignored, until the story becomes consistent with all directions, we are left in a place no investigation should ever leave the public. Somewhere between what happened, what's being said, and what's being kept quiet. And that's the most dangerous place of all, because in that space, speculation doesn't just grow, it thrives. What do you think? Tell me in the comments section on YouTube. Because your guess, frankly, is as good as mine at this point. When your sources are all over the place, and the official message is all over the place, and everybody jumps at one thing, says this cancels this out, and it really doesn't, it just creates more confusion. So who knows? Is he even a suspect? We don't really know the true answer to that right at this moment in time. Is this a murder investigation? We don't know. We know there's a dead girl and a lot of questions and still not a lot of public-facing answers. Give me your thoughts in the comments on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. You will find us there. Press subscribe while you're at it. We're trying to get to 100,000 subscribers by the end of the year. We're getting closer. We might make it. I don't know. With your help, we can. So please do hit subscribe if you want to keep following our reporting on this. We're trying to be as transparent and bring it to you as it happens. I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.